Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Anthony McCarthy will be here shortly, but before he gets here, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back to you in the end. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, www.mecu.com. So, folks, we are going to cover a bunch of different things today, I think. Anthony and I can talk about numerous things that are on the in the news. One thing is it just hit me real fast. So there's one thing before we get into our homeless issue. Just throw them out for you to think about. Anquan Boldin going to the 49ers. What were they thinking? Sure, we should pay the quarterback lots of good money. He did a great job, but ask him to take a cut in salary. So who's he going to throw to, Flacco? Guess we have to find another receiver. But we need to talk about that later in the week as well. There's all kinds of things going on. There's the whole question of the mayor and city workers and health insurance and cutting back on retirement. I've got some thoughts on that. Later on in the hour, I'd like to hear thoughts on that as well. Jimmy MacArthur pleaded not guilty today. We've been covering his Baltimore Spectator trial as well. We'll talk about that. And it's daylight savings time. I don't know about you, but this morning when I woke up, I was not happy. It was dark. I don't like getting up in the dark. I like getting up when the sun is coming up, not in the dark. But be that as may, speaking of getting up in the sun, there was a homeless encampment called Camp 83 in Baltimore. And it was under the Jones Falls Expressway, right by the prison. And we visited many times and did many stories. And two of our producers went to visit that encampment on Friday as the city was going to tear it down. But you'll hear the story here, and I'll let you hear the whole thing, and we'll come back. We'll talk about that together. Homelessness is a huge issue here in Baltimore. Today I went to the Leadership Advisory Group, which is a group that was formed in 2008 by the mayor to come up with a 10-year plan to end homelessness. And now the city is paying $100,000 for people to rewrite the plan that a bunch of us wrote for free. And so it raises a lot of questions, which we'll raise in the course of the hour. We'll be talking with Olivia Farrow a little bit later in the show. Farrow, who is director of the Mayor's Office of Human Services, and I think Kate Perdell will be joining her, who is director of the Homeless Services Program in Baltimore City. But right now, let me turn this over to me, in a matter of speaking, to the piece that our crew produced about the homeless encampment last Friday, the voices of the advocates, the voices of the homeless, and we'll be back to talk about it together in just a few minutes. So here we go. We've been covering the homeless encampment of people living under the JFX near Madison Fallsway by the prison for the last several weeks. They've been living there, some of them, for 2 years. The city said they were going to dismantle the site last week. That would be Friday, March the 8th. But before they could, a regular citizen stood up and found the residents housing who were living under the expressway, temporary good housing that the city itself could not find. What was left of their encampment, the city bulldozed last Friday. They were met by advocates and homeless to bear witness and to make sure their belongings were not destroyed. Producers Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery were there to tape, shoot, and have their stories told. We're going to be covering more of what happened Friday on our show today and in the coming weeks to hear what's happened to these people, what the city is doing to find housing for the homeless and affordable housing for the 40,000 low-income people who are housing insecure. 76% of those have a hard time paying their rent. We're going to find out why the 10-year plan to end homelessness was changed. But now, the story of Friday's dismantling of Camp 83, in the words of the advocates and the homeless.
It appears that everyone who was living here is no longer here. And all that's here are some of their belongings, some of which will be thrown away and some of which may be stored. But more importantly, there are a lot of folks gathered here to make the point that it's not the encampment that's a problem, it's the lack of housing and poverty-level incomes and lack of access to services that's the problem. So we'll be continuing to do this. We'll probably walk from here down to City Hall, and I have a gift for the mayor and for the director of human services, and then we'll, you know, reorganize and continue this struggle.
So the cleanup is taking place right now, then?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, there's a dump truck and some DPW people and someone from the city's Office of Emergency Management and from the Office of Homeless Services.
What have you got for the mayor, are you saying?
Hearts. A heart for the mayor and a heart for the director of human services. I think they seem to have misplaced theirs somewhere along the line.
My name is Michael Anthony Wiggins. I was released from the Federal Bureau of Prison on February the 12th, right? And since that time, I stayed in a motel a couple days, and I've been homeless. But I signed up for All-State Career Truck Driving School. I'm enrolled in that. But when I get out of school at 1:40 in the afternoon, I can't have a bed in a homeless shelter because I haven't been counted by staying in that room from 11:30 to 12:30 like 300 other homeless people. So the city hires the homeless people. They're in there right now sitting down waiting to get a bed that night. And that way they won't walk around the city. I asked somebody in there why it's like that. He said, that way the homeless people don't get on people's nerves. They just sitting in there waiting for a bed. They don't promote somebody like me to get out and get a job or to go work and go to school or whatever. Because when I get back, I don't have a bed. It's 1:40 in the evening. It's past the count time. And so what happens is this. You get up 5 in the morning. You go downstairs. You wait in the room there until 11:30 and 12. They make a count. And then at 3 o'clock, everybody that's in there goes upstairs and goes to the dorm, the bedrooms or whatever, right? I come out of school 1:40. I don't have anywhere to stay because I haven't been counted. I haven't stayed in there all day to be counted. So that's promoting people to be homeless. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a terrible situation, man. And you should see some of the cruddy and dirty conditions that go on inside there. The only people that's doing good in there are the staff. That's it. You know what I'm saying? And other nights I come out here with these guys and stay up underneath of there because I feel more safe than getting robbed or getting my stuff stolen from me or catching some type of staff type of disease. At least the cold weather will kill the disease. So I'd rather stay up out here where it's real cold with the brothers out there. You know what I'm saying? But if all's work out, like I say, I'm enrolled in All-State Truck Driving School. And yesterday was my second day. I came back at 1:30, and I couldn't get a bed, so I had to stay under here with these guys all night long and freeze.
Where are you going to stay tonight?
Where I'm going to stay tonight? Well, I don't have no school today, so I'm going to just walk around the city and go to the library, you know what I mean, and get on the bus, ride the bus all day and the subway all day, and just wait till Monday and go back to school again and try to get my truck driver's license. And once I get that, then I'll be able to help some other people get off the street, you know?
My name's Charles Jones. Me and my wife, Tracy, have been out at the 83 encampment for 15 and a half months. We came out here January 29, 2012, and our last day here because Belvedere Assisted Living came and got us a house was March 3rd, 2013. It's a three-bedroom house. It's so me and Tracy can get our four kids back together and we can try to rebuild some sort of life that we have.
And why are you out here today?
I'm out here today because I knew that no one else was going to come, and I didn't want it to be easy for the city to just come in and throw everyone away.
So what are they doing to people's belongings now?
Anyone that didn't take anything, they're throwing everything out. They said they would store stuff, but there's no moving vehicles here. There's nothing. There's trash trucks. They had no plan in saving anyone's stuff. Miss Christina Flowers, she is like the godsend in this whole thing, and she said that she asked Olivia Farrell, she asked her if there could be some contributions made to get some beds and stuff for these people, and her reply to that was if she didn't have the resources to accept these people, she should have left them where they were. She shouldn't have accepted them. So I really think that the city is not behind this at all. So, I mean, it's a shame. It really is.
So what's your name? It's Matt Quinlan. I'm with Housing Our Neighbors. So what's happening over there right now? So this is the eviction of the encampment, which the city had scheduled to happen at 8 o'clock. The city was on time at 8 o'clock. Department of Public Works is here. They're bagging up and throwing out everything that was left behind by the residents of the encampment. all of the residents were placed in a temporary transitional home within the last 24 hours. So none of the residents are here currently. And Gabby Knighton from the city, from the mayor's outreach services, has said that if any residents want to keep any of their belongings, that they need to be here personally to claim them. The transitional home is in sort of South Charles Village, Station North boundary. So none of them are, you know, here now currently to claim any of their stuff, including some of the residents. One gentleman who's incarcerated right now who obviously can't be here, but the city has been accommodating and trying to go through his belongings and figure out what they should keep and what they should throw out. Otherwise, everything else that's been left behind is being put directly into the Department of Public Works trash compactors that are pulled up on the long side of the road right now.
What's going to happen now? I mean, there seems to be a bunch of momentum behind this right now. I mean, you know, what next?
Yeah, so you can look just a block south, and there's more people sleeping on the side of the road there. A block south of that, there are people that set up tents every night and take their tents down. A block east, there's tents set up. So this is the residents of Camp 83, as important as this issue has been, make up just less than 1% of all the people that will sleep outside tonight, all the people that slept outside last night. There's still over 4,000 people, including the last count, over 600 adolescents from 13 to 25 that are sleeping on the street every night. So we're hoping to use this momentum just show the city that we are not going to stop until everybody has options or access to affordable housing, until the city's priorities allow for people to have access to affordable housing.
I'm Lisa with Lisa Klingenmeyer with Housing Our Neighbors. We're here today because the city has forcefully evicted 14 individuals from what's been known as Camp 83. The city's here today to clean up what remains of their belongings. Many of the campers have been able to move into transitional shelter thanks to some private charities stepping in. And while we're very grateful to those private charities, that's not really a solution to homelessness that's sustainable, which is why we're out here today. We want to make sure that the city's not let off the hook, that just because last night those individuals had a place to stay doesn't mean in a month, 2 months, a year, those individuals will still be housed. We know from experience the only solution to homelessness is a housing first model where we put people straight into housing. The city's already spending resources on things like emergency shelter, but that's not really good use of city resources. It's just an expensive waste of money that doesn't really address the core problems of homelessness, which are lack of affordable housing in the city, lack of jobs with a living wage, and lack of affordable quality health care. So we just want to make sure that we're out here being that message that homelessness is a serious problem. There's a lot of people that are dedicated to solving it. Let's work together to figure out a way to do those as a city.
And do you want to talk a little bit about the momentum that you've built here and what your plans are next?
Absolutely. Well, this is just one encampment of 14 individuals. There are several encampments in the city, and we know over 4,000 individuals on any given night are experiencing homelessness. So we want to propel the energy from this event to trying to figure out ways to start working with the other encampments, having conversations, constructive ones around homelessness, figuring out a way that the community that's interested in working on these issues can come together and start addressing them.
So you just say your name?
Luis Ladin.
Do you want to talk about why you're here today, like why you're out here to show support?
Of course. I'm a leadership organizer with the United Workers, and the United Workers is working in the Fair Development Campaign right now, which also includes housing. And for us, one of the issues is that the city is willing to give millions and millions of dollars to the to developers, but not to provide basic human rights for human beings. And housing is one of the human rights that we're fighting for. There is so many empty houses in Baltimore, as mostly in the United States, and yet we have homeless people. And we see this as a problem where the city is putting priorities of public resources using for private profit and not for for the citizens, and that's why we are here showing support and saying, you know, housing is a human right, and housing is also part of fair development. If what we are asking for is a fair development which respects human rights.
My name is Liam,
and why are you out here today, Liam?
You know, we're here to show support and solidarity for people who try to gather and come together in times of emergency, trying to use space that would otherwise be public when they come together to help themselves. Something like this happens. The state comes in. They're bulldozing right now. You can hear them in the background. And right behind the dump trucks is the truck with the barbed wire fence. You know, this is a space for people to gather, and now it's going to be a vacant lot with a barbed wire fence around it. You know, the city's been saying that this camp is a threat to health and safety, but, you know, or a threat to the public, but there's no public around here. It's flanked by a prison and an interstate. This is probably one of the best places that you could kind of disappear in the city. They're not afraid of or they're not looking out for the health of the people. They're afraid of togetherness.
This isn't trash. Y'all guarantee them storage. Y'all put those tents in storage.
The city had guaranteed storage room for them, and now they disregarded that. They wanted the tents in storage. There's some belongings still in there, so we want to hold them to their word. And now they're just showing us that they really don't care. So on behalf of the former Camp 83 residents, in case permanent housing does not fall through immediately, they may have to come back. And we want them to save some of their belongings.
What's your name?
Frank Talk.
We're just all here to point attention to the fact that this is not ending homelessness, that this eviction here is only pushing the problem, you know, under the rug, that the city claimed no responsibility in the housing first model, which is the model proven to end homelessness, and that, you know, we're just asking where our city's priorities are.
What's the housing first model?
So the housing first model is this idea that you house people first, and then their mental health and their physical health issues and their substance abuse issues all are much more likely to heal and recover faster.
That was Rachel Cutler, a University of Maryland social work student who works for the organization Housing Our Neighbors. And we'll be covering this and other issues of housing and homelessness over the coming weeks here on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we are here with you, and we're going to talk a bit about homelessness here for the next part of our program and then leap into some other subjects. Some other people are calling in at 410-319-8888. We'll get them on the phone. There's lots to kind of talk about in the news. But right now we are joined by Olivia Farrell, who is director of the mayor's...
Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Olivia.
Who is director of the mayor's Office of Human Services. Kate Burdell, who is director of the Homeless Service Program. And Gabby Knighton, who is outreach coordinator for the Homeless Services Program. And Olivia Farrell, Kate Burdell, and Gabby Knighton, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having us.
So you're all in unison there. That's a good thing. And you all can join us out there, 410-319-8888. So there were a lot of issues, as you know, around Camp 83, and people are on this transitional housing because of one woman's effort to kind of find places for these folks to live, and we've been covering it pretty intensely with them. But I mean, the question is, where do we go from here? I mean, there are other tent cities around Baltimore. I've stumbled across them in different places. I'm not going to say where. I don't want to get them evicted, but I've seen a couple under some places. It's also, you know, I was reading some things in other cities. Certain cities in America have decided to allow camp cities. Places like Portland and Fresno, California, Portland, Oregon, I should mean to say, Fresno, California, and St. Louis, Missouri came out with their own, the fire department came out with rules and regulations to allow people to live there, to cook their own food outdoors, and to have fire regulations. Some cities are being very creative about it. Do you think that maybe we might be able to take a lesson from them, Olivia, about what, not a lesson so much as to kind of take some ideas from other cities about how to handle this rather than kind of the destruction of these places before we actually find people the housing they need?
Well, you know, honestly, Mark, I think we're always open to looking at new ideas, best practices around the country and how we work with the homeless in our community. I think for our situation right now, I mean, we had to act according to, you know, the resources and the knowledge that we have right now, and that is when people are in a very dangerous situation, that we really felt it was time to take action. So we do know there are other encampments around, and Gabby Knighton is here, and she's worked over the past 2 years, you know, identifying encampments, working to dismantle other encampments. And so we do know they exist.
We don't dismantle an encampment when we discover that it exists. The outreach workers continue to provide services. It only becomes dismantled when the decision is made that it's a health and safety risk.
So I think this is Anthony McCarthy, and I just want to give full disclosure. I had the honor of working with Olivia Farrell when I worked for city government. I find her to be a really bright leader. But I just want to ask some very pointed questions. Some of the things that were said in the report, Olivia, I want us to either dispel or give folks an answer. This has upset a lot of people. Now, you just said that the situation was dangerous. And in the report, there was some question about health and safety issues. Could you define that for our listeners?
Yes, I can. Actually, there were propane grills used inside tents, outside tents. The fire department, the fire marshal actually took a look at the site and determined that there were some serious safety hazards in regard to fire hazards. We also know that, and Gabby can probably explain this a little bit better, but we do know certain times in encampments, territorial issues begin to arise. And we know there were some issues with domestic violence between some of the couples. So a lot of these factors all together really escalated our concern about the safety for the persons at the encampment.
And Gabby, speak to the voices. At least two people in the report were very upset by the lack of opportunities to put people's personal belongings in storage. And they kept repeating, the city promised us, the city promised. So I know that there were communications, conversations going on. Where did that mix up or confusion come from as far as the ability for these tents to be put in storage and some other personal property for the homeless people living under 83?
So there wasn't really any confusion on site unless there were protesters who weren't mm-hmm. actually in the encampment talking to me and other city workers. It was very clear, everyone who was actually in the encampment and not just standing outside it protesting, that belongings were being labeled for storage and put into bags, names labeled with a person's names on them, and put into the truck for storage.
Okay.
We got to take a very brief break. Olivia, Kate, Gabby, can you stay for another 5 or 10 minutes with us?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, we'll take a Thank short you. Break and come right back, so don't go away. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Mark Steiner's show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are awaiting an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's Transplant Program and becoming an organ donor is available at umm.edu/transplant. Anthony and I are still talking with Olivia Farrell, Director of the Mayor's Office of Human Services, Kate Bridell, Director of Homeless Services Program, and Gabby Knighton, Outreach Coordinator for Homeless Services Program. 410-319-8888. We're going to come to these calls here in just a minute and let you jump in as well. But, you know, there were a lot of stories about domestic violence. I talked to a lot of folks who live there. They didn't seem to mention that or say that was going on. Whether it was or wasn't is another question. But what you know, when we talk about safety, and we talked about this before when you were on the show a couple of weeks back, Olivia Farrell, that is it safer than a grate? Is it safer than living in a doorway? Is it safer than being on the street? And that a lot of folks don't want to go in shelters. And you heard I don't know if you heard it, but there was a young man who'd come out of federal prison. Who was living in that camp, didn't want to go to a homeless shelter because he could not get to the training program and also have a bed at night if he did that.
I want to really clarify, because there seems to be a perception that there were no other options for the residents of this encampment. In fact, there were. And actually, even for the gentleman that spoke directly about being in the training program, we have overflow that's open until 9 p.m. There are other shelters throughout the network, the shelter emergency shelter network, that are available, public and private. And so, and also the notion that there just were no other options. We were working, the outreach workers were working consistently with folks to look at different options, whether they be emergency shelters, transitional shelters, or potentially a hotel. But the reality is each person is had to be evaluated individually, and there are different resources that are appropriate for different people.
So different resources have different eligibility criteria. I mean, there was one program that has hotel dollars for people with very serious mental illness, and someone was assisted with that. Another program, so it depends on the severity of disability and type of disability, but people do have options. It sort of reflects, so there are valid reasons for not wanting to go to shelter, and there are reasons that, that if people are choosing not to go to shelter because they have trauma histories or severe mental illness, there are some resources that can be used as options other than shelter, such as transitional housing, safe havens. Some mental health providers have funding for hotel beds. For people whose reasons not to go to the shelter are that they can't bring alcohol or drugs into the shelter with them. There are not a lot of, other cities do, but Baltimore doesn't have shelter beds that allow you to bring drugs in with you or alcohol in with you.
But most people don't want to go to shelters because they can't bring alcohols or drugs. They don't go to shelters because they don't like living in gigantic dorms with foul smells and lots of people around them. And
it is unpleasant.
It's very unpleasant.
But, I mean, if we could afford hotel rooms for everybody, that would, be the ideal plan. But shelter is meant to be a temporary prevention from people being on the streets. It's much, even though it's unpleasant, it's much safer than being on the streets. In our past experience with a prior encampment that was under the JFX 2 years ago, when there were about 30 people, there were much more people living there, and most of them, when the camp was cleared, chose to go to shelter because there wasn't this push. There was no big protest. Most people chose to go to shelter, and within a few months, they had their permanent housing voucher, and those kind of concerns weren't raised that time.
Can I ask, this is Anthony again, can I just ask something about language? And because, as Mark was preparing for this, we got a lot of information from activists. And I think, Olivia, correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, Gabby, I'm sure you all have felt there is this tension between the advocate community. And I'm talking specifically not about, not talking specifically at this point about some of the homeless, but some of the advocates and activists who are in and around this issue. They took real offense, Olivia, to language that was used implying that around the drugs and alcohol and people not wanting shelters because of drugs and alcohol.
Well, and that quote was during a council meeting, and that was taken out of context.
Mm,
it was
okay.
A longer quote.
Mm-hmm.
A variety of reasons people don't want to use shelters. And, of course, they chose, the certain words that were printed. I think even Mary Pat Clark said that she was misattributed in that article. But, we understand there are a variety of reasons people don't want to use shelters. I know one of the campers early on, about a month ago, said he didn't want to go into shelter because he couldn't come and go as he pleased. And so that's a reason. There are a variety of reasons.
Well, I wonder, we talk about shelters, and I'm going to open the phones here after this before you all three of you have to run. But we're not talking about housing is the problem. I mean, one of the issues that people raise all the time is the problem is there's no affordable housing in Baltimore. I mean, I wonder what conversations are taking place at City Hall in a larger sense. And we'll talk to the Housing Commission about this and hopefully the mayor as well eventually. But, I mean, there's this law in Baltimore that says, and I don't have the exact percentage right, but I apologize for that, but I believe it's 12%. When you have a development and you have then city investments, you have to build affordable housing in addition to what you're building, But then it is that can be you don't have to do it if they say it's
okay. If you get a waiver.
If you get a waiver, thank you. That's what I was looking for. And almost every housing development seemed to get a waiver. So the question is, I'm curious, how much money have we not spent on affordable housing that way? Do we know that number? And you know, as someone said, with the City Hotel, the $1 million that we spent in kind of rescuing the City Hotel, that could have housed these people for a year or more even, or 10 years, someone told me. That's what they said, 10 years. I don't know if those numbers are right, but that's what they said. So what I'm saying is, are we asking the right questions? Are we really dealing, you know, when I hear that the city is says, and the mayor has said in this program, that we want the state to ensure that Section 8 vouchers are honored by all landlords, they have to do it. That doesn't mean you have to take the tenant. It means you have to honor the Section 8 voucher. But is that a priority? Are we really lobbying hard in Annapolis to get that done? Do you know what I'm saying?
We do know, and I think you were at the meeting today, Mark. I mean, Paul Graziano did say that is something we're absolutely supporting and pushing for. That would really allow swifter action in getting people into housing, those who do get the housing choice vouchers, if we could find landlords who would be willing to take those vouchers more willingly.
In good neighborhoods where they wouldn't be concentrated just in the poorest neighborhoods. Yeah, that's really important.
So do we have some calls we need to
We do, and let's get a call before you all have to go. 410-319-8888. Reverend Meredith, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, Anthony.
Hey, Reverend, how are you? Welcome.
Great to talk to you.
You know, from where I stand, I think that a lot of the frustration that people have, particularly communities of faith working with the homeless, is that we see a lot of priorities coming out of City Hall that have nothing to do with poor people and that marginalize poor people. We see attention to the Grand Prix race. But we know that there are over 40,000 abandoned buildings in Baltimore. So we're wondering how are people homeless and there are 40,000 abandoned buildings, and the city is literally giving money to people to run a race through town that most people in town don't even care about. And people are very, very upset that it just seems like the bread and butter issues around homelessness, the lives and the well-being of regular old Baltimoreans are not being addressed. And it's very distressing, particularly as a minister. I have gay and lesbian youth coming up to me saying that they've been put out of their house. They may not be counted among the number of homeless, so to speak, because they're not in a place like Camp 83, but they are couch surfing. And they don't feel safe in the shelters because they feel that a lot of times they are bothered and molested because of their sexual orientation. So how do we address these issues in a comprehensive and compassionate way, giving equal time to those who are the least of these and also to the wealthy patrons of this city? I'll take the answer offline.
Thank you so much.
Who would like to start with that?
This is Kate Burdell. I'll be happy to talk about it. I can't speak to everything that she addressed. I can't speak to the Grand Prix, but I can tell you that we've been had the good fortune of having an AmeriCorps worker with us over the last year working on gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues in and around our shelter system. She has developed a protocol to make sure that all of the city-funded shelters are aware of policies and how their policies, admissions policies, and the policies within the shelter affect LGBT folks, and really helping educate them to make sure that they become friendlier places or friendly places. We've been very pleased with some of the scores initially of some of our provider agencies. That is something we're very aware of, is the concerns people expressed about, LGBTQ youth.
Let me just ask another question, because I know you all have to go. I know you are very busy. I know you work very, very hard. Mm-hmm. But I just have to tell you, Kate and Gabby and certainly Olivia, one of the most heartbreaking times of the year for me. And me, I provide food for homeless. I know where there are some camps that we take food to, and they don't want to be found because for a variety of reasons. One of the most heartbreaking thing, of course, is every year when we gather together and we read the names of homeless men and women who have died in our city. And I just want you all, Olivia, give the people like Reverend Moyse, who serves so diligently and tries to help people so diligently, how can we begin to move past this distrust? Because I don't know if you heard it in her voice. I heard it.
Yeah.
There is an enormous amount of distrust in this mayor and this administration. She is a friend of mine. But, Mark, I have to tell you, the frustration is growing in this city between those who have and make decisions. The words that Ricky Spector used on the floor of the city council. There is such a disconnect. Olivia, what are we doing as a city? Reassure people that it's really not about the mayor being embarrassed about what's going on 83 when visitors come to the city, that it really is about the health, the welfare, and the well-being of citizens, whether they live in a home or they live in a tent. They are residents of this city.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Anthony. I mean, the reality is we like the engagement of the population. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that people really took attention to this issue to really talk about the larger issue of affordable housing, we're not afraid of that. We want that engagement. We want that conversation because the mayor does want to make sure that everyone in the city has an affordable place to live. And so, you know, we're not afraid of that. We like people to engage with us civilly and, you know, continue that conversation.
Well, we try to engage civilly here.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
But it is a very important issue. I mean, we've been covering for a long time. And we are in conversations now with the Housing Commissioner's Office to have a town meeting, which, of course, all of you and all of our listeners are invited to as well, where we'll talk about housing and public housing and vouchers and affordable housing in Baltimore.
I think that's a great idea.
And we hope within the next month we'll have that town meeting set up, and we are planning to do it at this moment at Douglas Memorial Church that has offered a space to have town meetings for the community on the west side of Baltimore. So we'll look for a place on the east side as well. But we'll be doing the first one there at Todd Yeary's church. Well, it's not his church, but where he's pastor at Douglas Memorial Church. And I want to thank the three of you for taking your time. I know that you got a lot to do, and I appreciate Olivia Farrow, Kate Burdell, and Gabby Knighton for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
You all take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's go back to the phones, Anthony, shall we? At 410-319-8888. We're going to get to Bonnie Lane, who's called in, who just wrote a story about the Anderson case, which we want to hear what she's been doing with that. But let's go to Bobby first, who has a thing about homelessness. Then we'll go to Bonnie Lane. Bobby, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hey, Bobby.
I stayed homeless for 5 years. Wow. I'm walking around Baltimore City for a long while. You got warehouses. You got one on Fulton Avenue down by Cal Park doing nothing. You got a lot of warehouses in this town that is doing nothing, sitting there empty. You could take some of them warehouses and put women and children in one and men and women in another. So there's not a problem with we don't have any way to house the homeless. We're just not looking for options, and we don't want to look for options, see? So, therefore, I stayed down to the federal building with 200 men strong for 5 years. So we know the answer. You just got to get the people who own these warehouses to start to re-renovate them and put people in. Y'all have a good day.
Thank you, Bobby. Thanks for calling
wow.
in.
Wow. So five years, Mark.
There are, yeah, it's crazy.
It's almost impossible to believe.
No, I know. I mean, and the thing is, with people realize that and I mean this in all seriousness, that most of us are but a few paychecks, maybe 10 paychecks, where that number happens to be, away from not having a home. I mean,
and Mark, you know that you may not know. I don't talk about it a lot, but there was a time when I lived here in Baltimore where I lived in my car for several months and was too ashamed to tell people and too ashamed to ask for help. Could have had help from a lot of great people like you and others, but did not want to disclose the situation I was living in.
You didn't, not until after the fact.
Not until afterwards. But it is, you're right. People, we have, Mark, we have people who are middle class, who were middle class families who are homeless, who lost their homes, who are moving from shelter to shelter, from family member to family member. And it amazes me. I don't want people to think that, Mark, all we do is criticize, because we certainly seek out, and that's why you're having these town hall meetings, where we're seeking out solutions. There are solutions. Cities are doing this. But what we do have to do, and this is a blessing for your career in radio, is that we ask those tough questions, because it can't just be about, well, there was a health and safety concern. Like Olivia Farrell said, there's a much bigger problem. So our job is to ask those questions and demand answers from people who are receiving, monitoring, and are responsible for giving out millions of dollars, Mark, in housing and homeless dollars. Are we doing that effectively? Well, we don't have to look very far to find cities like Portland and others
right.
who are really being creative in how they, and it's not about managing homeless people, but how they give opportunities to people who are homeless.
If I was homeless, I would much prefer to live in a tent with friends around me or people I know
safe.
Than live in one of those funky little shelters that smell. Who wants to live like that? You know, I mean, we're going to go back to the phones here. Is that all right? 410-319-8888. Mike, hold on. We're going to come to your call. But let's go to Bonnie Lane, who's been holding on for almost half an hour. I'd let her talk a bit. Then we'll go right to Mike, who wants to talk about homelessness. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hi. Actually, I'll comment on both, if you don't mind.
I'm sure you would, Bonnie Lane.
I agree that Bernstein should be fired. And I also think he should be charged with accessory to murder for covering up the murders that these officers committed in the Anthony Anderson case. And Stroman has committed in several others. I think he is a disgrace to Baltimore and police in general. And regarding what's going on with the homelessness in Camp 83 and City Hall and the whole mess, I really want Olivia Farrow to publicly apologize to the Camp 83 residents for calling them alcoholics and drug addicts in the Baltimore Sun. And it's interesting to note that Olivia has no background in human services or homeless services. She came from the health department and was a lead paint examiner. So I'm questioning why she has no compassion for the people she serves. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. You still there?
Nope.
Oh, Bonnie's gone. I wanted to find out about the Anderson case more. And she interviewed, I'm going to read it, she interviewed an indie reader, Anderson's son. And I wanted to hear more about what happened with Marcus Pettiford. And what happened with that? I mean, that's a situation I think that really begs more investigation. I mean, as a lawyer, a friend of mine, a professor of law, said, Doug Colbert said to me, he said, these are the kind of things that the state's attorney should have a more public hearing about in front of a judge rather than behind closed doors, so people can see what's going on, see what the evidence is, because these are very sensitive, real issues. And when the medical examiner declares that this was a murder, he called it a homicide. Let me say that. He called it a homicide. Well, people, if police commit a homicide, if anybody commits a homicide, there should be better answers than the ones that we were given.
And Mark, I think that one of the things that I think is very, very important here, and you know, we can't have it both ways. And I believe in accountability. We've talked about it. Greg Bernstein was here with us, and you and I asked him the tough questions. And, you know, Mark, the activists were saying that he should recuse himself and the state's attorney's office should not be involved in this investigation. But Greg Bernstein said, hold me accountable.
Yes.
Hold me accountable. And, you know, I was elected to make these decisions, and ultimately he made a decision. I'm with you that I think the process, Mark, for the state's attorney's office sake and the sake of this family that has so many question marks, it should have been a much more open process. Now, we take Greg Bernstein at his word. I know you do and I do. That it was a thorough investigation, much of which he led himself and asked questions himself, interviewed the coroner himself 3 times. And already, Mark, and this is where my frustration comes as an activist, already we begin to see the waning, except for the family and a few activists, of interest in the Anthony Anderson case. Once a decision has been made, no one's still pushing and demanding that the feds get involved. And so I get mad sometimes because we get so indignant and angry, and rightfully so, about some of the decisions and some of the things that happen. But then people forget so quickly and are ready to move on. When was the last time someone said the name Trayvon Martin on these airwaves and other places? It's frustrating. Very, very frustrating.
I agree. And so though we did talk about Trayvon Martin.
You sure did. That's why I called.
Just a couple weeks back.
You're right.
410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air.
Good evening, folks.
Good evening, Mike.
All right. I'm going to begin with a cliche.
All right.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. And I know you've all heard that because people say it. Mm-hmm. Well, I was involved for a long time in this homeless question. Damn, I'm so old, I'm almost as old as Mark Steiner. I'll tell you the truth. That's a fact of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was active in this homeless thing in the 1980s. And the same damn issues I'm hearing today, I heard then. Ain't nothing changed about it. And people say, oh, we're willing to talk about it. Well, I listened and I didn't hear any talking about a solution to homelessness. How the hell are they going to give people homes? It's really not that challenging a problem intellectually. People need homes. And we're spending, I don't know how many billion dollars, I don't know, just take Afghanistan or Pakistan or one place or another around the world. Let's bring that money home and give people homes.
Hmm. Thank you, Mike. I'm sorry, were you finished? I mean to cut you off.
This is that old guy, right? Yeah, I'm finished.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
He's almost as old as Mark Steiner.
What are you trying to say, Anthony?
I think it was very interesting. He made that observation. You know what, Mark? It is, however, the only thing I would disagree with Mike on is it is much more complicated than people need homes. I mean, the simple premise, yes, that people definitely need homes. But how in the world do you get public officials and the government to have the will to just focus on this problem like a laser beam until we begin to solve it? That's what we need. I mean, my frustration, Mark, around this issue and so many other issues, is that we really need, and government's not the answer, but there has to be the only answer. There has to be these strong partnerships between private industry, between nonprofits and service organizations and churches and government. But everyone talks a good game, but no one really walks the game. There are people who are housing people, who are feeding people, but the numbers are so small. And when you look at the number of homeless people in this city, Mark, the city would tell you there's only 4,000
a night.
You and I probably have visited and walked around and met 4,000 homeless people.
So I think we have to wrap up here.
Okay.
But,
I'm sorry. I get on.
No, it's okay. I think we do have to wrap up here. I don't want Martha to be upset that we didn't get out of here in time and just, you know. Want to do that for her?
That's right. Keep it moving. With
gotta keep it moving.
Gotta keep it moving.
But I think we're going to keep looking at this. One last thing I'll leave you with is that there are 40,000 low income families. Well, they call low income families in the city. 76% of those families have trouble paying their rent. So it's that very serious issue that we face here. Anthony, thank you.
Always great to be with you, Mark.
Remind you all, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland's public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction, and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. And we're brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our intern is Lila Warshaw. Our theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, learn about our guests and the work that they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.